as the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the seventh. Newhouse, the first White Sox hitter, score 4-2 in favor of the White Sox. Rhodes is just arriving out there in the mound. A good crowd out here today, as well as a great crowd of youngsters out in that left field stand. Fans there watching. As the ball was thrown out to second base, Johnson missed it out there and had to chase it out into the outfield. He just knocked it down, but he gets it and throws it back. And the pitch is ready to pitch again to Hart. Starts his wind up. Throws. And Mule swings to foul the ball back toward us here. Catch is coming back fast. He might get to it. He didn't quite make it. And it's strike one. Haas walks over to pick up his mask and rub off the padding. Get the dust off it. Hands it back to Frank as he gets back up there to plate. Hayes made a good try for that ball. And it's one strike on Haas. One strike count. Throws again and Haas takes the ball inside across the waist. And it's one and one. One ball and one strike on Haas. He swings it. The next one, a high fly in the right center. Moses is waiting back there for it. Gets it easily. And it's one out of the seventh inning. For the seventh inning, White Sox. And Dick Venora is at bat. Venora up there at plate. Winds up the pitch, the first one throws, and Zeke swings it, a pop fly going foul to the right of the plate. Hayes is also chasing that one over to the stand and grabs it down there, but apparently couldn't quite hang on to it. He crashed into the front of the stand, apparently is unhurt. Comes walking back there, made another nice try, and as a result, it's one strike on Big Zeke. One strike on Venora. Pitcher throws again with Zeke hitting a hard bounder to Johnson, who comes up with it nicely, throws the first, and it's two out of the seventh. And Luke Appling is up there at the plate. Appling at bat. Well, School's keeping again out there in left field bullpen. Cellini's putting in his afternoon work. One of the other boys taking long work out there with his muddy rule. Luke swings the first pitch in, a high fly to right field. The right fielder coming over. It still misjudges the ball a little in the wind and sun, but manages to follow it over far enough to get it for the third out. So it's no runs, no hits in the seventh inning for the White Sox. And at the end of the seventh inning, White Sox still lead the Athletics, the score being 4-2. When every minute counts, you'll find that it doesn't pay to guess about gasoline. Tourists, traveling men, people who drive many miles a day against time, find that Texaco Fire Chief never lets them down. And best of all, it costs no more than ordinary gasoline. Dean, Chevy Dean, the A's first baseman, is at bat to start the eighth inning for Philadelphia. Kennedy throws the first one. He hits it to left field, but it's foul down there and just misses one of the warm-up catchers, and it's strike one. One strike to count. Joe Morris, he's down there taking a workout, warming somebody up, warming up Cellini, and that ball just missed him. There's ball one high and wide, and the count is one ball and one strike on Dean. One and one is the count. Swings again, hit a ball back through the box. Appling almost gets it back to second base, but not quite, and it goes through into center field for a base hit. Single to center field by Dean, putting him on first base. Nobody out in the eighth inning. And Puccinelli, the Athletics' right fielder, is at bat. Puccinelli up there at the plate. Throws, and George swings it, a ground ball down to Appling, who gets it, throws to Hayes. Jackie throws the first, and it's another double play. Well, that White Sox infield is certainly turning in those double plays these days. He's got that ball flipping around out there in real championship style. So it's two out in the eighth inning for the Athletics. And the next man up there is Bob Johnson, the A's second base. Johnson at bat. And he throws the first one, and Bob swings to miss a high fastball inside, and it's strike one.
Strike, George. Strike one.
And there's a ball wide and low, so the count is one ball and one strike on Johnson. One and one to count. Johnson swings the next in a high fly down back at first base. Lenora's following it over into foul territory and makes the catch for the third out. So it's no runs, one hit in the first half of the eighth inning. And the score remains 4-2 in favor of the White Sox as they come to bat in the last half of the eighth with Jackie Hayes, the first man at bat. Broadcast the White Sox Philadelphia game. Come to you direct from Comiskey Park, home of the White Sox in Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco Fire Chief Gasoline. The broadcast comes with the permission of the White Sox and the Athletics to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local baseball team. This is WCFL Chicago. Rhodes finishing his warm-up. As Jackie Hayes stands there waiting to take his turn at bat to start the eighth inning. Finishes the warm-up. There goes the ball again up to second base. And we'll be ready to go now in the last half of the eighth. Hayes waits there at the plate as Rhodes gets his sign, gets ready to pitch to him. Starts his windup. Throws, and Jackie reaches out and sort of pushes the bunt out toward first base. Dean gets the ball and races for the bag. Hayes beats it out for a base hit. Dean couldn't make any other play on that ball but that. He started for the base and realized that the pitcher couldn't get it. So he raced out to his right, grabbed it. And Rhodes wasn't anywhere near getting to first base. So Dean, without losing any time on the play, didn't hesitate at all, raced for the bag. But Hayes, a fast man, beat him. And it's a base hit for Jackie, his second of the ball game. Puts him on first base with nobody out in the eighth inning. And Tony Fiat is at bat. Fiat runs up on the first one. He's going to try to hit it to right, but the pitch came in high and inside. And it's ball one. There's a high one inside for ball two, and the count is 2-0. Two balls and no strike on Fiat. Run nothing to count. Throws again, and Tony swings in a line drive, and the shortstop leaps high in the air to grab the ball and then holds it when Hayes gets back to first base so quickly that to make a throw would be to take a chance on an error. The ball was hard hit, so hard hit that Hayes, who had made a break for second, saw where it was going and hadn't had time to get far away from the base by the time it was caught. But he was able to get back. And so Hayes is still on first base, one out in the eighth inning, and Luke Sewell, White Sox catcher, is at bat. 4-0 swings around, ready to pitch the first one. Throws, and Luke swings in a drive out into right center for a base hit. Going on out there, it's past the right fielder,
going clear through to the wall. Hayes is around third base on his way home. And Sewell is pulling up at third base. He makes the turn, but the ball is being run in. The center fielder raced up to the wall and stumbled and fell on that incline of the sod out there at the far end of the scoreboard. But that triple by Sewell hit the wall. That is bounded out as far as the wall, landing against it at the far end of the right field scoreboard. And it's Luke's second extra base hit of the game. First one going to him by virtue of wind and sun. And it drives home Hayes with a run that gives the White Sox a lead by a score of 5-2 and brings Vernon Kennedy, the White Sox pitcher, to bat. Oates out there gets ready to pitch the first one. Vernon throws, and Kennedy hits the ball into left center for a base hit. His second hit of the game, and it scores Sewell easily from third base with the second run in the inning and the White Sox sixth run of the game. Kennedy's other hit was that terrific smash off Rhodes' shin that bounded out into right field for a two-base hit. And he scored right after that on Radke's single. Now the Rippers up there at the plate. One out, two runs home. In the eighth inning, and the first pitch is inside and low. The ball one. The stocky left-handed hitter. The A's have started two pitchers warming up in the right field bullpen, both of them right-handers. Throws another one, and Kennedy hits it down the right field line for a good base hit. I mean, Radcliffe got Kennedy is around second base. Ball is coming over there to second base, and it kind of bounds up rather peculiarly. Newsom knocks it to the ground in time to hold Radcliffe at second and Kennedy at third. It's a double down the right field line by Radcliffe. And it looks though there's going to be a change in pitchers. Rhodes turns and starts for the clubhouse. And Earl Mack, son of Connie Mack, and one of the coaches of the club, walks up there to tell the umpire who the new pitcher is going to be. I believe it's Ross, do you? Mr. George believes it's Ross. Mr. George very often is correct. Very often correct. He didn't do very well on that one. Lisenby, I didn't know he was with this club. We used to call him Lisenby when he was with, if it's the same fella. He used to be with Boss. He isn't even in the program here. Can't tell the players without a scorecard. In this case, you can't tell this one with one, can you? Lisenby's a right-hander. Looks very much like the same boy who some years ago was with Boston and Washington. Whether it is or not, I'm not sure. He's been up in the International League and going pretty well lately. And he's finishing his warm-up out there in the mound. With catcher Hayes as Previch waits take his turn at bat. White Sox now have runners on second and third. One out, two runs already home in the eighth inning. Now 6-2 in favor of the Sox. And Previch finally steps up there as umpire Quinn dusts the plate. And the infielders trot to their position. Again, the infielders come into the edge of the infield grass. Try to cut off any run at the plate if possible. She throws, and Previch takes a fast strike over the outside corner across the waist. One strike on Previch. Winding up once more, throws, and Mike takes a high one wide for ball one. Count is one ball and one strike on Previch. One and one. Winds up again, throws, and Mike swings it, a slow foul to the left of the plate. Waiting back here is Haas, and he grabs the ball on that high bounce, looks it over, tosses it back to umpire Quinn, who had already given the catcher another ball to put in play. Umpire pockets that one as fit for further use, and Previch steps back up there once more. White Sox runners on second and third. Mike starts to swing at the next one, stops, the ball hits the bat and goes foul. Back to the stand. He was pulling away from it to keep from finishing his swing because the pitch was high and inside. And in pulling away from it, the ball hit the bat and went foul to the stand. Haas is walking back to get it. Still one ball and two strikes. Lisenby throws again, and Mike Swing did a slow bounder into the infield of third baseman. Higgins comes in fast, gets the ball, and throws the first, nipping Trevich by an eyelash over there on a very, very close play, and it scored one run. Kennedy scored easily, and Radcliffe went to third on Trevich, infield out, and Higgins, incidentally, had to make a beautiful play on that ball to get the run, and he nipped him by an eyelash. That's three runs this inning. White Sox leading the Athletics 7-2 with Radcliffe still on third base, two outs, and Mulehaus at bat. The first pitch to Mule is a wide one low, but ball one. Throws once more for a strike over the outside corner waist high, and it's 1-2. One ball and two strikes. 1-2 to count. Hitter hits the next one, a bounder out back at second base. Shortstop Newsom gets it, throws the first, and Haas is out for the third out, ending the eighth inning. In the eighth inning, the White Sox had three runs, four hits, and one man left on base. And the score at the end of the eighth inning, the White Sox 7, Philadelphia Athletics 2. As I said before, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bring some mail out meant to today that I've received from fans who have gone over the scoring system that we have in the Texaco scorebook that you can obtain so easily that the Texaco company is giving away with great pleasure. That system in there is very complete, more so than a lot of systems, but naturally there are some certain little tricks that we have that you can hardly put in a system because everybody has certain of those differences. And if you want to know, have any questions about the scoring, drop me a line. I'll either give it on the air or possibly, if I can, if there aren't too many questions, do it by mail so that you can have all the dope. But remember to get this book with room for 17 games, a complete scoring system, and the stocks and subs and rosters. Stop in at any technical station, ask for a request card, fill it out. All he asks for is your name and address. Mail it. It's already addressed to me. Put a 1-cent stamp on it and mail it, and you'll get your book. Now to start the ninth inning, Higgins at bat, and the first pitch comes by wide for ball one. One ball called. And there's ball two, wide across the knees, making it 2-0 on Frank Higgins, known as Stinky Higgins, the Athletic third baseman, who already has a walk and two hits in this ball game. Umpire threw the ball out of play that was being used there, and the next pitch comes high inside. Ball three. Didn't do much good, did it? Count is 3-0, three balls and no strikes. There comes the first strike. It catches the inside corner just above the knees. Run the count to 3-1. Three balls and one strike. Kennedy winds up again, throws for ball four. It's wide and low, and Higgins now has a perfect day at bat with two walks and two singles. Pinky's on first base. Nobody out in the ninth inning for the Athletics. And Frank Hayes, the catcher, is at bat. Hayes up there at the plate. Kennedy throws the first one, and Hayes takes a strike, a fastball over the outside corner about knee high. One strike on Hayes. He swings the next one, hit into left field for a good clean base hit. The runner from first is stopping at second. And the Athletics have started what might turn into a serious rally here. They have runners on first and second with nobody out in the ninth inning. And Newsom, Lamar Newsom, known as Whitey Newsom, the Athletics shortstop, cocky little blonde-haired right-handed hitter is at bat. He takes the first pitch for a strike over the heart of the plate, about waist high. One strike to count. Pinch hitter going to come up here now. Bat in place of the pitcher following this man. I haven't spotted quite yet who it is. Probably Nemec. Hitter hits the next one about it back through the box. It goes on into center field for a base hit. One run is coming into the plate, and they let the ball go. The pitcher started to get the ball and deflected it so that it changed the course enough, and the catcher couldn't see it. It hit his leg and bounded back to the stand, letting the other runners go to second and third. And now Kennedy is really in the spot. The last instant, Kennedy who had his hand up, tried to pull it down to let it go at, apparently at the catcher's call, but he deflected it so that Luke couldn't see it. So on Newsom single to center, Higgins scored. And Hayes went to second, and now just what who they called that error on, I'm not sure. We're trying to find out from Wayne Otto, the official scorer, who is back from his vacation. Then Nemec batting for Lisenby, hits the ball down to Appling, and is thrown out at first base for the first out with Hayes scoring on the play. To give the Athletics two runs this inning and make the score 7-4. And ahead of the batting order, Lou Finney is at bat, taking the first pitch inside and low for ball one. It dropped out of Sewell's glove, but he grabs it fast. Then he hits the next one, a high fly coming down foul back at third base. Platt follows over there and makes the cut for the second out. And that makes it two out in the ninth inning. Two out in the ninth inning for the Athletics. And Moses is at bat. Wally up there at the plate waiting now. And the first pitch is high and inside for ball one. Hitter swings the next to hit a high fly. Also foul going down back at third base. Platt is following it over and makes the catch right in front of the stand for the third out. And the White Sox win the ball game 7-4. They signaled to Whitey that that was an error on the throw, George. Well, that's what I figured it probably was, but we wanted to make sure of it. That error that let the man go to second and third is given to the center fielder on the throw. Peter Johnny is the throw, and that's the way that was scored. Now in the ninth inning, the Athletics had two runs, two hits. There was one error and one man left on base. And the score is 7-4, White Sox. Making seven runs, 13 hits, one error. They had eight men left on the base. The Athletics had four runs, nine hits, two errors. They had seven men left on base. Time of the game, an hour and 45 minutes. The winning pitcher, Kennedy, and the losing pitcher, Rowe. Summary again, for the benefit of those who keep all those things in the scorebook and are checked with them, the technical scorebook. White Sox, seven runs, 13 hits, one error, with eight men left on base. The Athletics, four runs, nine hits, two errors, and seven men left on base. Time of the game, an hour and 45 minutes. Winning pitcher, Kennedy. Losing pitcher, Rowe. Tomorrow is Ladies' Day, and the Boston Red Sox will be in town to open their four-game series in three games. Single games on Friday and Saturday, and a doubleheader on Sunday, and the doubleheader of the first game, as usual, starts at 1:30. We'll see you on a lot of those days, but if you're not out here, why, we hope to be talking to you, but that's all for now. And speaking for George, as well as myself, Hal Totten, bid you good afternoon from Comiskey Park, and we return to the studio. Bye now.
Speaking to you from the studio, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you a summary of the other baseball games that have been played this afternoon. First in the National League, in New York, the Chicago Cubs. Snap your roadwork. It has the stamina, the quick getaway, the reserve of extra power and speed for the open stretches that make sluggish cars look like part of the scenery. Texaco Fire Chief is emergency-type gasoline. That means Fire Chief meets rigid federal specifications for emergency use. It's fast-firing, crowded with action. Fill up with a tank full of Fire Chief, then try out your car. You'll find that in response to the same pressure on the accelerator to which you're accustomed, your car will step out faster, and that you'll get more enjoyable miles from each gallon. Reason enough why more tourists buy Texaco Fire Chief gasoline than any other single brand. Remember, when you get a filling of fire chief at the Texaco station near you, you'll be getting more for your money. So drive with Texaco and save. Your neighborhood Texaco service station has brought you this broadcast direct from Comiskey Park by permission of the Chicago White Sox and the Philadelphia Athletics to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local team. Fred Fowler speaking for the Texas Company invites you to tune in tomorrow afternoon at 2:45 for another baseball broadcast with Hal Totten at the microphone. And whenever you hear the siren and bell, think of Texaco. The voice of labor.